You're listening to the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires.
Life is good. Rounds the far turn in front. Ginobili is sent along by Drayden Van Dyke, trying to come and get him on the far turn. It's three lengths back to eight rings, and Restrained Vengeance has moved up into fourth. They're into the stretch, and it's Life is Good off the turn with a 2.5 length lead. Ginobili full out in second. On the inside, eight rings is third. They're coming past the 16th pole. It's Life is Good, and this colt is incredible. Life is Good, won it by six lengths over Ginobili. Restrained Vengeance was third. Eight rings was fourth.
A pumped-up Larry Colmus with the call of last year's Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, won by the brilliant Life is Good, who returns to the races later today. He will be accompanied by a new rider, but is that guy the right choice for Life is Good? Plus, Bob Baffert's suspension ends today. What do we expect to see from the Hall of Famer going forward, and what does it mean for racing to see Bob back in the game? And which horses are among the top turf milers of all time? We're going to discuss all of those topics and much, much more on a 4th of July edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. And it's all presented by the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program in the College of Business. It all starts just 30 seconds from right now.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 35 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
All right, guys, let's start with the Bob Baffert suspension news. Bob Baffert's 90-day suspension ends today. So what do we expect to see from Bob going forward, and what does it mean to see him return to racing? Dale Romans, I'll throw it to you first, my friend.
Well, I think we can expect him to come out of the box swinging and win a bunch of grade ones before the end of the year, like he always does. But the best thing about it, I think, for racing is it's putting the whole thing behind us now. He's done his suspension. He's back. He's still got to deal with Churchill Downs and a little bit with New York. But the biggest thing is he's got a suspension over for a bad test, and that's all behind racing. And I think it's good to have him back, and I think he'll come out swinging.
Tim?
Yeah, you know, I agree with Dale. I think that Bob's going to be back with a vengeance. I would assume that he's going to have a major influence on the Haskell, a race he's had so much success with. And, you know, Monmouth Park is welcoming him back with open arms, which, you know, he served his time. That's what the other tracks should be doing, too. I mean, it's unfortunate that, you know, there's people in racing and also just the general perception, because Bob has been so successful through his whole career. And it's easy to take a shot at the big guy. How many people hate the New York Yankees? How many people hate Tom Brady? You know, because they're successful, you know, but, you know, granted, Bob he's got some things in his past. Yes, he does. But, you know, he's done his time, and I think he's going to have a successful bunch of horses wherever he goes, because he's always been that way. He knows how to train horses, and he's going to show that again in the summer and heading to see what happens at the Breeders' Cup.
Dale, do you think he comes back with a little chip on his shoulder?
Oh, I know he will. I know he will. But he's such a competitor anyway. It's not like he can come back and be any better than he already was. So,
but it'll be interesting to me how he deals with the media. He's always been a very, very media-friendly guy. I wonder if that changes a little bit. I wouldn't blame him if it does.
He'll win them back over the right way. He'll be the media darling again. But yeah, I think he's done his time. From now, you know, the regulators should have taken care of this whole issue, not the racetracks.
Yeah, well, it'll be good to see it'll be good to see him back in the game again. I do think he is good for racing, and it'll be interesting to see how the second half of the season plays out. And you know, the tracks that he is going to be allowed to run at, I guess California, he'll be allowed to run in New Jersey, as Tim pointed out, with the Monmouth situation there. Not in New York. What, guys, where does this end up with New York? Does, I know there'll be appeals and all those types of things, but do we see Bob having to sit out that full year in New York?
Well, as it stands now, probably yes, and I just think that's wrong. I don't know why New York came down so hard on him. He's never had a positive in New York. To me, it seems like, I don't know if there's jealousy involved with this or what, or if it's just a personality thing with people in New York don't like Bob. But whatever it is, I think it's wrong.
Yeah, I agree. It's very wrong.
How much additional scrutiny do you think that his horses are going to undergo? Will there be additional testing like there was when he was running horses in the Breeders' Cup before he was suspended? Will we see a lot of that going on at these different racetracks, do you think?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it'll get back to normal. I think that he will be scrutinized. They might be watching, but they should do that for all of us and all the time, and I'm sure they'll be testing after wins, but as they should be. But I don't think you'll see a lot of extra scrutiny on him because the places that he's running, they all, you know, they're just going to do it normal.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you can't put a separate set of rules in for Bob and not then for everybody else. You know, that just wouldn't be fair at all. It might not even be legal for, I don't know. But I think that the rules should be for everybody. You're not going to have a separate set of rules for Bob Baffert. I think that he comes back. He's going to train his horses, and I'm sure he's going to be very careful with everything that goes on.
Yeah, they did try that with having a separate set of rules for Bob Baffert before the Breeders' Cup, though, didn't they? When Bob's horses had to go.
They did for the Preakness.
And for the Preakness, too. Yeah.
But, I mean, I know.
He agreed to that, too.
Yeah, but I don't think they should make make another set of rules just for him.
Right.
You know, for all time. I mean, I just think that would be ridiculous.
Yep. All right, well, we'll see how this all plays out in the second half of the season. All right, question number two, moving on. 4-year-old Life is Good is returning to action for trainer Todd Pletcher in today's Grade 2 John Nayrud at Belmont Park in what is going to be his 9th career start. How about this, guys? Through his first 8 races, he has been ridden 4 times by Hall of Famer Mike Smith. Those were his first 4 races. And 4 times by Erod Ortiz Jr., those coming in his most recent 4 races. Well, Erod is currently serving a suspension, so Pletcher has called on jockey Flavian Pratt to take the reins in the John Nayrud later today. What do you think? Good call, Timmy?
Yeah. I mean, Flavian Pratt is, a heck of a rider. You know, he's made his bones out in California. I mean, he's won multiple riding titles at Santa Anita and Del Mar. And, you know, he's making New York home now because, you know, he made no bones about it. He said when he moved to New York, he said that's if he wants to win an Eclipse Award, he's got to ride in New York, and that's what he's going to do. And, you know, so far, I mean, he's made all the right moves. I mean, right now, he's fifth in the jockey standings in New York with 24 wins. And that was like with 118 mounts. That's 20 less than anybody else that's in the top 11. So, you know, he rides Flightline. He rode Zandon. He won the Preakness last year with Rumbauer. I mean, Todd isn't just going to put anybody on a horse like Life is Good. Believe me, he does his homework, and he knows how good Flavian Pratt is. And Flavian is going to – he is not going to leave any stone unturned with Life is Good heading into the Nayrud, believe me.
Yeah, he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's on his place in his trail there right now, and you're not going to get any better than him. He's as good as anybody in the country.
And he can ride any type of horse, right?
Yeah, he can ride any type, and those type are easy to ride. Just point in the right direction.
Yeah. I knew that question would be a chip shot for you guys, but I wanted to throw it out there considering that he is just the third rider that Life is Good has had aboard him in what has been a stellar career. All right, so how about this one? Topic number three. On July 4th, 1998, that is this coming July 4th, it's going to be the anniversary of Elusive Quality completing the fastest mile in history in the poker handicap over a firm turf at Belmont, stopping the clock in 1:31 3/5. Well, that mark was lowered 20 years later by now Millridge stallion Oscar Performance, who set a new world record for the distance in 1:31.23. He was sizzling that day. What are the greatest turf milers in racing history that you guys can recall? And Dale, I'll come to you first.
I'll tell you one of my – I mean, that Oscar Performance thing was special. And I ran a horse by him a couple of days ago, his first crop, and he's going to make it as a sire, too. Everywhere you go, you hear people talking about how much they like the babies. And my horse had a little trouble on a turn, but still ran a really good race. I think he's a special horse. But I'll tell you, one of my favorite milers on the grass all time was Lure. I thought that he was pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, he
– what do you think there?
He's one of several that – you know, have more than that have double wins in the Breeders' Cup Turf Mile. I mean, you know, Goldakova, the filly, won that race three times. You know, Wise Dan, who was one of the more versatile horses we've ever seen. I mean, he ran on, he'd probably run on tar. I mean, he was just a very formidable horse, and he won the Breeders' Cup Turf twice. Teppan, I mean, what she did on her career, 10 tries at a mile, had 7 wins, 5 of them grade ones. I mean, that was how do you get past that? And maybe the best of them all was the great Frankel, who won all 14 of his starts, and 9 of those came at a mile. So, you know, there's no lack of great turf horses. De Haas is another one. Miesk, you know, double winners in the Breeders' Cup Turf. To come out and just say if there's one that's better than any, I think you'd have a tough time saying that, because all of these horses, I mean, that's an all-star team right there for the milers on the grass.
Dale, I think Timmy mentioned every Breeders' Cup mile winner in history. The only one he left out was Court Vision.
He did. He left him out. And he remember, Court Vision beat Goldakova, and Silver Mox beat Wise Dan, but we didn't talk about either one of them.
Well, the thing is, Dale, when Mike was talking about chip shots, I was leaving the chip shot for Court Vision for you. I was leaving the door wide open.
Yeah, that was a pretty exciting day. You know what that just proves to me, though, is that, Tim, you got too much free time. You do way too much research for our 30-minute program.
Hey, it's in my head. A lot of it's in my head, my friend.
Uh-huh. Right. It's all in front of you right now. I know. It's all written out. I know how you work.
No. I'll tell you. I'll have a class with you up at your barn at Saratoga this summer. We'll go over some of this stuff.
Assuming he lets you know that he's in town, Timmy.
Yeah, right. I will. I'm coming in on the 12th.
Are you there now?
No, we just stayed that one day for the wedding.
Who got married?
Terry Finley's son, Ryan.
Oh, cool.
Married sure one. That was, good girl,
I'm
Allie.
Sure that was a time.
It was a really good time. It was a great wedding. Beautiful. The weather was good. It was outside overlooking Saratoga Lake and a beautiful farm. It was a nice day.
Yeah, well, congratulations to Ryan then. That's great. Good kid, too. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yes, he is. Good family.
All right, question number 4. Today's Grade 2 Stephen Foster at Churchill Downs is one of 8 win-in-your-in races for the Breeders' Cup Classic Division. The others are the February Stakes in Japan, which was already won by Cafe Faro earlier this year, the Haskell, the Whitney, the Judmont International in the UK, the Pacific Classic, the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and the Awesome Again Stakes. Which of those 8 prep races do you guys view as being the most critical if you want to win the Breeders' Cup Classic? Timmy?
Well, since I did my homework, as Dale well knows that I did on this. now, the Breeders' Cup win-in-your-in started in 2007. And since then, horses that have prepped, for their prep heading to the Breeders' Cup, 5 of them were in the Whitney. 5 of them won the. 5 of them were ran in the Whitney. 4 of them ran in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And then you go that Haskell had a couple, Awesome Again, 2. Stephen Foster had 1. But, you know, there's some other horses that, you know, had a different path altogether. You look at Arrogate. I mean, his prep race, last race before the Classic was the Travers. The same thing for American Pharoah. I mean, I think that I think the win in your ends are an important piece to get to the Classic. I don't know if it's the main reason to run in a race like that just to get to the Classic. Horsemen know the schedules for their horses, and I think they're going to, and Dale can tell more about this, but they're going to send the horse where they think the horse fits and is ready to run. But as far as the best race of this group to get to the Breeders' Cup, I'm going to go with the Whitney. Nick's Go is another one. He won the Whitney last year. Then went to Kentucky, won the Lucas Classic, and on the way to the Breeders' Cup. But I think the Whitney is a key race for horses that are heading to the Breeders' Cup because it fits so well in the schedule, early August. And then a lot of them will race one more time. Some might just train up to the race.
Yeah, I want to agree with you on the Whitney. I love the Whitney anyway. I think it's just a special race. It's one of the premier races in the country. But it's a good prep for a couple of reasons. Because it gives you options. If you win it, you can sit back and wait and just run in the classic if you got that type of horse. If you got a horse that needs more work, you can get one more race between the two. So the Whitney, to me, is the best prep race. But that's one of my favorite older horse races in the country anyway.
Dale, did it seem, from a trainer's standpoint, is it advantageous? Let's say you're running the Whitney and then you train up to the Breeders' Cup. Would you rather do something like that, or would you rather race in another race before the Breeders' Cup?
Well, it depends a lot on your horse. I personally, if everything was perfect, probably want to run one more time. But then you take a horse like American Feral. Remember, he got beaten at Travers. I don't know if you remember that, but
I do remember that.
Who beat him?
Horse Keen Ice beat him. Yeah, you all might remember that horse. His son won the Derby this year.
Who trained Keen Ice?
That happened to be me. But besides that, that's not why I brought it up. But my point is, I think American Feral was probably getting a little tired. He had run in the prep races and then all three Triple Crown races in the high school, and he came over to Charlotte. I think it did him good to have the time between the two races, and he came back and ran gangbusters in the classic at Keeneland.
Do you think horses nowadays have to be pampered more than they used to be?
Well, it sure seems like it. I don't know why that is. I don't know what's changed, but we were talking the other day. If a horse had 10 days between races when my father was training, that was a time off line that was put on him.
Right.
He would run every 7 days, and now you can't do it anymore. And I don't know why. I don't know what it is about the horse. Or if you tried to, the media would tear you up.
Is it because of the breeding, do you think?
I really don't know. I don't know what it is, T.J. I think we do things a lot different than they used to, and I think that all plays into it. Everybody's getting so calculated, and the cheaper horses, it would be common to see one on the program that run 50 times. You don't see that anymore.
Hey, Dale, what do you consider to be the bigger upset? Court Vision beating Goldakova or Keen Ice beating American Feral?
Well, I think Keen Ice by far is the most historic win I had. Yeah,
I think there's no question to beat
a Triple Crown winner. I'll tell you about Court Vision winning that race. That was a power-packed mile, but to me, it seemed like it was all horses that may have gone over the tipping point a little bit and were on the downside of their careers instead of on the up. And he was doing so well that day; he just had a perfect day, and he got the money. Goldakova.
Well, I'll bet you. Go ahead.
She was a favorite, but I don't think anybody thought she was a cinch after three times.
Yeah, it would have been her fourth, Dale, right?
Her fourth.
Well, I'll bet you, Dale, the people that stop you on the street, they bring up Keen Ice a lot more than they bring up Court Vision.
All the time. Yep, especially around Saratoga.
Yeah. You probably don't have to pay for a meal up there.
Everybody bet on the other horse.
Graveyard champions for a day.
You were a villain for a day.
Yeah, I was. But I will tell you this, that all the locals love it because they love that reputation of Graveyard of Champions.
I know.
Yep.
Or is it the Graveyard of Favorites? Which one is it?
I don't know. You can say it either way.
Yeah.
It's been said both ways. I don't know which one's the right way.
I've heard it both ways. All right, we've got about 4 minutes left here in the segment. Two more topics to get to. One of those is our food topic and then our winner of the week or claiming foul segment. The food topic, how about this one? Timmy came up with this one. I love it. Nathan's famous 4th of July hot dog eating contest once again is taking place at Coney Island this Monday. World champion Joey Chestnut is looking for a new world record after eating 76 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes last year. So, guys, what's the over-under? And, Tim, I'll come to you first. What's the over-under on the number of hot dogs you could put down in 10 minutes if you were going up against Joey Chestnut?
Well, if I was going up against Joey Chestnut, I'd have to have my head examined because that's insane to have to even think about eating 76 hot dogs in 10 minutes. I mean, I don't know how he doesn't blow his breakfast in front of a national television audience every year when he does that because, I mean, it's insane. That's one of the – I mean, to watch – but I don't want to get on a soapbox with that. If it was me, I'm putting my over-under on 3, and I'm going to have a tough time putting down 3.
Oh, you could do better than 3.
Okay, I'll say 4. 4, and that's pushing it.
I'm taking the over. I think you can do better.
No way. But they have to be Zweigel's hot dogs. I'm not eating those crazy little, you know, those little things that they serve down there. They look like big worms.
Dale, how about you?
Hey, well, in today's world, I could eat about a half of one. Since I had gastric sleeve surgery, but there was a time I wanted to take on Joey Chestnut, so I wanted to take him on. I think I could have beat him.
You think you could have beat him?
Yeah, back in the old days when I had my full stomach, he would have been in trouble. He's just lucky. I always had to run horses on July 4th.
Hey, does he set the record this year? Does he go over 76?
I'm taking under.
I think the guy's nutty enough, he'll probably eat 80.
Yeah, I'm not betting against him. There's no way I'm betting against Joey Chestnut in that 4th of July hot dog eating contest. All right, one final segment. It is our winner of the week, claiming foul segment. You get to recognize the winner of the week or claim foul against somebody in racing. Timmy, why don't you go ahead and kick it off first this week?
Well, my winner of the week is because Saratoga's opening in, less than 2 weeks now. The main track at Saratoga opens today for training. So that's my winner of the week. And, I'm claiming foul against anyone that thinks they can eat 80 hot dogs or 76 hot dogs. That is just insane and ugly to me.
My winner of the week is Timmy's preparation. Keep it up.
All right, Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin. Guys, enjoy the weekend. We're going to do it all over again next Saturday morning. Really appreciate the time again.
Hey, Mike, thanks.
All right, fellas. See you later.
All right, that segment brought to you every single week by the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program and the College of Business. Don't forget, if you have a question you want to hear Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin debate, all you have to do is email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, and I'll make sure we get it worked in for you over the next week or two. Back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.